Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. We have a special edition today as we bring you a special feature. That's right, myself alongside with Mr. Chad Riley.
Howdy.
And Spencer Williams.
What's up?
Oh, thank God. I was hoping you weren't going to do the hey to his howdy like last week. I'm like, as soon as he said howdy, I'm like, oh, God. But thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Like I said, we got a special edition of the Filmlosophers for you today, as we are going to be discussing Avengers Infinity War.
Like the movie.
The movie.
The culmination of 10 years of movies and like 80 years of storytelling.
At least. I mean, we kind of brushed on it last week on Lesson 110, where we discussed kind of the crash course version of what we thought about Infinity War and our thoughts and
opinions. Few predictions.
Few predictions.
See if any of those came true. Well, I mean, we won't necessarily tell you because this is a non-spoiler review.
But we had a chance.
But we know if some of them came true.
No, no doubt. Because of the fact that we had a chance to see it twice. In the last 2 days, myself, Chad, and Spencer braved the large crowds out there and went to go see it with the hundreds of other Stark raving fans. And it was an experience, to
it
say
was.
The least.
It was an experience.
But like I said, this is a special feature as we're just going to be doing this review and we're going to be talking about the film. But realize that we are not going to be talking about spoilers, so... Don't worry if you, as soon as you heard it, Infinity War and review, that you're going to be like, no, I don't want to spoil, I don't want to spoil. We're not going to do spoilers.
We're not going to give you a roster of who lives and who dies and exactly what happens. That's not happening here.
No, plus you can find a nice spreadsheet online. It's much
no,
more organized.
No.
That's not nice.
No.
I didn't say it was.
That's mean.
Didn't we talk about spoilers last week, Spencer?
I didn't say I was making the spreadsheet, guys.
Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that official synopsis? Goodness.
Sure. Iron Man, Thor, the Hulk, and the rest of the Avengers unite to battle their most powerful enemy yet, the evil Thanos. On a mission to collect all 6 Infinity Stones, Thanos plans to use the artifacts to inflict his twisted will on reality. The fate of the planet and existence itself has never been more uncertain, as everything the Avengers have fought for has led up to this moment. And the Guardians, by the way.
Yes.
The Guardians are also in this movie, in case you didn't know.
In case you missed that trailer.
Yeah, this music is getting to me. directed by the outstanding Russo brothers, the film stars a whole plethora of a cast, including Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Benedict Cumberbatch, Don Cheadle, Tom Holland, Chadwick Boseman, Paul Bettany, Elizabeth Olsen, Anthony Mackie, Sebastian Stan, Danai Gurria, Letitia Wright, Dave Bautista, Zoe Saldana, Josh Brolin, Chris Pratt, and many others. Like I said, last week we had the opportunity to really kind of dive into a lot of the opinions that we had, the predictions, like Chad mentioned, a lot of the stuff that just really does get a lot of the speculation going because of the fact that everybody wants to know what's going to happen at the end of Infinity War. So if you haven't caught up or if you want to get into a really great discussion of that particular subject, head over to our lesson 110, where we go way deep into a lot of areas where...
Possibilities. We hadn't seen the movie yet.
True.
When we did that episode.
It's all speculation, all rumors, all theories, all opinions. So head over there. But before you do, Infinity War. So jumping right in, obviously we're not going to go through the expectations because we said that last week. But I think it's safe to say that Infinity War is probably one of, if not the best Marvel film to come out of that studio.
It's definitely a fitting culmination of all the films that have come before. I still think, because in episode 110, we did a quick list of our favorites, our top three. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We haven't sat with this one long enough for me to know where on the overall ranking of, what, 19 films?
Yeah, now 19.
Where this one fits.
Yeah.
I would say that I still have a stronger affinity for other films other than Infinity War.
I saw
War.
What you did there.
No. Oh, my
so
gosh.
Clever.
But it was, I thought it was a very exceptionally well-crafted film. And one of the remarkable things about it is because, as many people should know, if you don't know, then you're going to hear it here first. But it's not a spoiler to say there's another Avengers movie that comes out next summer, in early May, unless they bump up the date for that, just like they did with this one. So this story doesn't. This part of the story concludes, but the overarching story does not conclude.
No.
In this movie, there's another installment that's still ahead of us.
If anything, I think it's safe to say this film kicks off what is to be expected for Phase 4 in terms of the what to see, what to look for, what to view, who you're viewing, where you're viewing it at. This film really does a great job of allowing you as the viewer to recognize that Marvel's going to really go for the fences with the next phase.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is great to recognize is whenever a film does a really great collaboration with its properties, with its other films, and usually you swing and miss, i.e. DC, when you try to create like a collaborative effort with several different characters that have had either a standalone film or have been established as, a decent superhero within that realm, within that franchise. I think seeing as many characters as we saw in this film and still being able to keep up with the overall storyline without losing focus on who's who or what's what, or turn my focus there and, oh, wait, but because I think one of the things that you said, Spencer, mm-hmm. last week was that you weren't sure how they were going to be able to maintain showing all these different characters and still have a consistent storyline.
Yeah, because we're talking about 18 movies worth of characters. That was a lot of people to just balance across like 2 hours and 30 minutes. And so that was the thing I was concerned about. And they actually did a pretty fantastic job. Like whenever we hopped between like the people we were following, it was, you were excited to see, oh, what are they doing now? So I was very happy about that.
I agree. I think that one of the really charming things about the film is that you tie in supporting characters. You've got Wong, for example, from Doctor Strange. You've got Heimdall from the Thor franchise. You've got, obviously, one of my favorites, Okoye from Black Panther.
We need to start an Okoye fan club because
oh, it's so on. That woman is just boss level. Can't get enough of Okoye, but you've got a lot of, you've got M'Baku from Black Panther is in it, has a few lines, has a couple prominent, parts of a fight sequence. So it's nice to see not only the primary superhero characters, if you will, but also some of the secondary characters.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And I think in this particular film, I don't know if they meant to say 64 main characters or you would recollect 64 recognizable characters, because I don't know if I actually saw 64 main characters.
No. Definitely not. That was a hyperbole number, I think.
Yeah, because
I think what they meant was they looked at 64 characters and then they had to whittle down from there. That's what I think.
I really do believe it was more of a, we want everybody to be important. We want everybody to matter to the audience. So when the audience comes in and they say M'Baku on screen, they're like, oh yeah, he's a main character. Or Okoye, oh, she's a main character. Although they're side characters, I think the idea is to place the importance on them, so when the actors, or not actors, when the moviegoers go and see the film, they're like, oh, okay, there's importance lying on this particular person and that particular person, for the sake of however this film ends and whatever direction they decide to go.
Well, and hopefully going into this film, at least during opening weekend, most of you who are seeing it have already seen most or all of the films that have come before. So you're already familiar with with at least the look of a character. You don't have to remember their name, but you know the basics, because as much as they do a pretty good job setting the table with every scene change, they're not fully catching you up on every single thing you should know about every single character. There's not time for that.
Right.
I think one of the great things this film also does is we're talking about characters and we're talking about individuals. It's interesting how much more, and mind you, it may be because how high the stakes are, but it seems like they've created with their core, like Captain America, with individuals like members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, individuals like that, they've really dialed in a lot of that heart aspect to the character. Like I'm like watching Captain America, I've seen his face and his focus of the world around him evolve ever since the first Captain America, the first Avenger, all the way through in all the films. And in this one, it just seems like, I don't know, it seems like his focus is solely on saving people as opposed to serving the greater good. And I mean greater good in terms of like serving his country, serving, you know, the organization he's with. It's like it's boiled down to that, and you see it translate so well on screen. And they actually do that with several of the characters, and it's really refreshing.
There's a tremendous amount of emotional depth mm-hmm. in this film, and not just the stuff that you expect, but also just some quieter moments that are surprising but meaningful. There's a ton of emotion in this movie. I mean, all the feels.
No doubt.
It's what we call subtext in terms of the performance. So the actors are bringing their A game, which is nice because honestly, most of the characters do not get a huge amount of screen time. So they've got to make the most of the time that they have, you know, to make it work. Some characters, obviously, like your Robert Downey Jr. performer, like he's going to get a lot of screen time. Mm. Surprisingly enough, someone like Doctor Strange actually gets, for a newer character to the mix, he gets a lot of screen time in this film.
Yeah.
You know, so there, but not everybody does. I mean, for example, you don't see very much of Shuri. Shuri has a specific role in the story, but she's not on screen for 20 minutes out of a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
She's on screen for 5, 6 maybe.
Which mind you, I mean, depending on, and this goes to like whatever they decide to do with like the Blu-ray release, but I mean, in my mind, this isn't really a spoiler, but she didn't get enough time, I felt, on screen to kind of react to a lot of what's going on. Like, her reactions in Black Panther are spot on. Mm-hmm. Like, the way she just responds and reacts to everything around her, that added a lot of the comedic elements to Black Panther.
Yeah.
Just in her response, you know, oh, yeah, another white boy to fix, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I felt like there was a wanting to bring that into this particular film, but I don't think for the sake of the environment or how the scene was going or the mood of the scene and everything. Yeah. It was, but I felt like when the Blu-ray comes out, I'm hoping there's a lot of scenes that were cut that are of her, just like this long, super long Shuri gag reel kind of thing. I'm just hoping
just to show her ad-libbing some things.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I think that the architects behind this universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, are very, very smart. I could see a character like Shuri, depending on whether or not she survives, because we're not spoiling things.
Yeah.
You know, but she could be, you know, one of those in another installment rises to more prominence if she carries through, you know, like,
yeah,
because of what she's capable of doing from an intelligence standpoint, let alone the tech that she has to use. But she's, I mean, it's been established in writing in comic books that are considered part of the canon,
yeah,
that she is the smartest individual on Earth.
The prologue
in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
So as literally the smartest, smarter than Bruce Banner, smarter mm-hmm. than Tony Stark, the smartest, and basically like just out of her teenage years, if she were to continue beyond the end point of this movie, she could definitely be a force to be reckoned with in the continuing story of Avengers 4, whatever that turns out to look like.
Right.
Was there any standout character for you, Spence, that you really enjoyed? Without spoiling anything?
No, I was listening to the intro.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Just Mr. Rosebud over here.
No, not again.
Week. That was last week. We're over that.
We've moved on.
Standout characters. Really, again, I cannot say enough about my girl Okoye.
Yeah.
Just like she didn't even have that much of a role in this movie, but I was there for that.
She was spot on. Like they not only wrote the character really well for the screen time that they had with her, but the performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're all thinking of the same.
The performance of that character solidifies her as like total favorite.
Yeah.
Like she came
here for Black Panther 2 for her.
She came from almost nowhere. Like Okoye is not a primary character in the comic books that you've known for years and years and years and years. And mm-hmm. like to come from basically obscurity in the source material to being one of the best characters that they have in no time at all. I like hands down to Danai Gurira because she owns it.
Fantastic. She conveys so much without even saying anything.
No words at all. She's like, so good.
Oh gosh. Keep her for as long as humanly possible.
If they ever did do, depending on how all this shakes out, you know, down the line, if they ever did do like the all-female squad or whatever, like they've talked about before, make her the leader. I know Black Widow's been around for the longest time, or Captain Marvel may be coming in, or like whatever might mm-hmm. happen down the road, but it's all about Okoye.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of it.
And speaking of performances and speaking of the ability to convey, another standout performer, and I don't want to delve too deep into this, but I do want to recognize the character of Thanos, the villain in this film.
Okay, yeah, seriously.
I think one of the great things, so one of the stigmas of most superhero films, and I'll say most because of the fact that this is a issue that both sides, DC, Marvel, any film that has a consistent franchise of, you know, films involving the superhero aspect and a villain, one of the things that always tends to be the shortcoming for those are the ability to create villains with more depth to them than just the mere come, destroy, get beaten, lose, whatever kind of stuff, or however the film pans out. Marvel is notorious for this more than most because of the fact that they have more films.
Yeah, they've got a ton of movies. Yeah.
You can honestly say the only real interesting villain that has been within the last 18 films, at least one of the main villains, Loki, obviously, because he keeps recurring.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he toes the line. Sometimes he does have heroic tendencies if it suits him.
Killmonger was another one, but mm-hmm. obviously if you've seen Black Panther, you know there's no future for that one. So
the Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming,
but then that's Sony. And if it,
well, but it's a shared,
you're right.
It was a villain done well.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. But when coming into Avengers Infinity War, that you knew that was going to be one of the things at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. Were they going to create a Thanos that has depth to him? Or is he just the Mad Titan who goes off and wanting to do ridiculous stuff? And thankfully he is completely and utterly like this interesting character that I would be almost willing to say I'd be open to having a whole film just based on him.
Yes, because I was thinking the same thing.
He really does have a lot of depth to him. He has they created a character that has more layers to him than what you expect.
And honestly, hats off to ILM or whoever mm-hmm. was working mm-hmm. on the digital mapping mm-hmm. over Josh Brolin's mocap, because it is all there. You have like mm-hmm. moments of like quiet pondering where there's a vein popping in his forehead a little bit because he's tense, or like just the level of detail and the truth in the eyes especially is remarkable with what they've mm-hmm. done with this character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Josh Brolin, so I'm going to be honest, at first I didn't think Josh Brolin could do a good Thanos. Like at first with the first Guardians of the Galaxy film, where we get that first glimpse of him in his full,
you know, when he's like on his throne in when space, he's on his talking to Ronan.
Yeah. I didn't really like that scene. I thought it sounded hokey. I thought he looked hokey. I thought the way he was speaking, it didn't sound right. It didn't seem correct to me. It didn't seem appropriate. It seemed forced, to be honest.
Sure.
Now flash forward all the way to now, and I don't think I could see anybody else really doing that role. I mean, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. It was such a great performance on both the mocap teams and as well as Josh Brolin. I don't know. I was floored, to be honest.
He is totally captivating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he has to be because he, as we thought, he is the main character.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, obviously, all the other ones are important, but everything pivots on him.
Yeah,
and 100%. What he does or does not accomplish,
right,
from his goals.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because of the fact that you have a film based around a villain who, honestly, I think you had said it, Chad, there wasn't really much depth to him in the comics in terms of, you know, really going through his backstory and whatnot. He seemed, not to be, you know, kind of silly, but he seemed a little two-dimensional in the comics as, you know, dealing with what his goals are, what he wants to do, what he's setting out to do, how he accomplishes it.
And they've added some texture to him over the years. I mean, he's been around for a few decades as a villain, and he pops up from time to time. But and each time they do a little bit more texturizing, if you will, in terms of why he's doing something, what exactly he's doing recently. You know, they a couple years ago launched a new Thanos series where there were some additional elements of his characterization that kind of gave you a different perspective. Like he had some sort of a disease or a cancer of some sort that he could not get rid of in spite of all of his willpower, you know, and so it gave him a foil. A weakness, a thing that was not just heroes defeating him or whatever. It was a personal struggle that he was going through that added some depth to his characterization in the comic books. Obviously, that's not an element here, and it's not a spoily kind of thing to say that he does not have a disease.
He's not a disease titan.
So, yeah, he has been largely two-dimensional. He's been extremely formidable in his two-dimensionality, but he's been mostly two-dimensional for the bulk of his existence. So it's nice to see here they've capitalized on not only a lot of their understanding of how a good villain needs to work, but also all the things that they have seeded along the way.
Yeah. And I think it was Josh Brolin who did an interview with one of the movie outlets. And he had stated that this film is going to give you another glimpse of how you view Thanos and how he is going to be portrayed, not just as a villain, but as, like we said, a three-dimensional character, a character who has depth, a character who has struggles, a character who has a agenda that he believes with all his heart, which I think makes him more formidable than others. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Every time he talked, I was like, is it weird that it actually kind of makes sense of what he's saying? And it's like, but that's not okay, you know?
Yeah, like, I think one of the things I liked most about him is that he made sense. Because you know how some villains, like, I have this plan, and you're like, but is that really feasible?
is that really going to work?
Like, no, Thanos makes sense, and he explains himself enough to the where you can follow along with what he's trying to accomplish in this movie.
Not that we're looking to you know, destroy anything or become villains. It's just the way he's passionate, the way the character portrays that passion behind his endeavor and his goal of what he's looking to achieve in this film, you can't help but recognize the passion and all, like, working in tandem with the way the mocap worked, the way you see, like Chad was saying, the subtle, you know, movements of the eyebrow, the way his eyes glisten, the way his you know, mouth moves to this way, and you see that subtle smirk, or the way they portrayed this character completely just engages you whenever he's on screen.
Well, and you also have other characters who provide a counterpoint. Mm. You know, so yes, he makes total sense. You can see the logic behind what he's doing, his logic for why he feels that this is the best course for literally everyone in the universe. But then you have other characters who combat that, you know, through dialogue or through fighting, who insist that his belief does not have to be the only right path. And that was also really healthy to see that what he's doing makes so much sense that you can have a mature conflict conversation about it. In particular, not to give too much away, but in particular, Gamora has like direct counterpoints to his methodology.
Mm-hmm. Being the daughter of Thanos.
Right? Yes.
Just in case anybody forgot and doesn't remember.
Which Gamora
that.
Is Zoe Saldana's character from Guardians of the Galaxy. Just in case some of you are playing catch up, that's totally fine. She's the one with the green skin.
Yes, not the blue skin.
And so, but I mean, she has truly since a young girl, young age when she was first taken into Thanos' household, if you will, she has witnessed firsthand better than anyone how his mind works.
Yeah.
So she's better equipped than anyone to provide a counterpoint, and she is able to do that. Whether or not she gets through to him, she is able to passionately combat his mentality. And because it's not just a mustachio-twirling kind of maniacal villain, it actually comes across as a very mature argument.
Where
it's like, oh, I can see where you make sense, but then this other point is extremely valid as in opposition to how you believe things should go.
Yeah. And speaking of Thanos' endeavors, I think obviously one of the biggest expectations that a lot of people had, which was set by the Russo brothers themselves and Kevin Feige, was that this film was going to reshape the landscape of how you view the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And like I said, we're not giving anything away. We're not going to be talking about anything. But I think it's safe to say that there are a lot of things in this film that we both somewhat expected and completely didn't expect. And I think that's one of the great things about the Marvel, just the Marvel company altogether, how they're able to create these storylines. This film seriously had my mouth open from start to finish. Like I could not keep my mouth closed in awe of everything that was going on for 3 minutes at a time, because it just kept dropping to the floor. And
I mean, it really says something, and this is not overly spoilery, but you have multiple fatalities within the first 10 minutes of the film of named characters with whom you are at least somewhat familiar in the opening sequence before they show the title of the movie.
In the first 16 minutes of it, because of the fact that I kept time, because one of the screenings we went to, they had actually froze in the beginning of the
night.
That was amazing.
That was horrible. We should ask for him. No, but you're right. And it says something to what it sets the tone, if you will.
Absolutely.
For what to expect for the rest of the film, because one of the things that I immediately recognized was the mortality of every single character that I've loved for the last 10 years, every single life that I've invested in, watched several times, either in the theaters or at home, is on the table for what's to come in the next 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Nobody's life is certain. Everybody is expendable in this film.
I think that's what makes the movie so great, though, is that there are no safe characters. That
right.
Like, oh, well, they have to be in the next movie. No, no one has to be anywhere.
And I think here's the thing. My mentality has been, for the last 18 years, I think we've created kind of a mentality for most superhero films where a superhero goes in and he's almost godlike. He can do all this. It's not so much as a matter of greater strength versus their strength. It's more of a quantity of strengths on one side opposing their strength. I don't think we've ever seen an instance where the strength of these individuals is being outmatched by something else far stronger and far more dangerous. And when it comes to, like Chad was saying, within the first 15 minutes of that film, you realize Thanos is completely and utterly destructive. Mm-hmm. And he's willing to do whatever it takes to get what he needs.
Yeah, I mean, he's just this relentless force. I mean, he is the drumbeat of destiny of a certain sort. Absolutely more than formidable, totally committed, utterly relentless, and calm about it. He's not crazy.
No.
His perspective, we would hopefully his perspective, we would say, is short-sighted,
yeah,
and has some madness to it for sure.
Right.
But his demeanor and his actions are methodical.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he has this air of inevitability about him that is utterly captivating.
I think it's safe to say that,
and you would never write him off.
No, I would say that it's safe to say that Thanos is probably the most intelligent villain they've ever had in the MCU. The way he goes about doing certain things in this film, the way he plots out certain situations, the way he is mindful of his entire surroundings, the way he just everything that he does in this film, you know that they've created a character who has thought out every single step of what he's doing, and they execute it so well within this film that it's insane. Like, he's insane, but yeah, it's insane that how well this character is somebody that I actually enjoyed watching doing what he was doing on screen. Not because I'm some kind of sadist or anything, but
say, that's pretty sadistic.
but to see how well Marvel has put the time and effort into creating this perfect villain to combat the Marvel Cinematic Universe, not combat the Avengers, not combat the Guardians of the Galaxy or whomever else is coming, but to combat the universe itself. I think they've just created this remarkable villain that is a true force to be reckoned with.
And they really had to. I mean, if they had failed at that after 10 years of storytelling, that would have been like the biggest fail.
The biggest flop. I would have,
It's not. It's very refreshing to be able to say they did not flop on that. They did. Like, that's not a fail.
Can I get my money back for the last 10 years? Just Marvel, just go ahead and send it in, you know, a check form.
But I love what you were saying, though, about the stakes of this story, because you referenced the fact that we all saw it twice already. Mm. So the first viewing, your initial viewing, if you can stay spoiler free, please do. Because your first time viewing this movie, you do not know.
Oh my gosh.
Who's going to bite the big one? When they're going to bite the big one? Is anybody going to win?
How they're
going to
bite it?
Like, you don't. It's so valuable to not know. Your heart rate is spiked most of the time. Your breathing is shallow. We saw it in 3D both times. And I was thinking, like, some of the fight choreography in 3D, we haven't seen it in non-3D yet, but some of the fight choreography is some of the best that you've seen, the hand-to-hand combat. Like, the weapons are so dangerous, and they're so close to your characters' heads and bodies and whatever. And, I mean, it is no joke.
No, not at all.
Thanos is not afraid to use one or more of the Infinity Stones directly toward a character, and you don't know, like, did that just end them or not? Like,
yeah,
you do not know until, everything ultimately shakes out. Like, you don't know how it's going to end up. And that tension and that agitation adds to the drama of the experience of the movie. So please, if you haven't seen it yet, don't go looking for spoilers.
No.
It's so much better to not know going in. Because then when you see it the second time, because then you know what you know. I thought the second viewing, to me, was an entirely different experience. Because I know how it all shakes out. So the uncertainty factor is gone. And so much of the depth settled in a lot more the second time around. Not that I didn't get it the first time.
Oh, man.
But the second time around, some of the musical cues and just the pathos of the performances really sunk in deeper the second time, because I knew what was going to happen or what wasn't going to happen. And so I was able to pay attention to some additional details.
I don't know about you, but so that first time we saw it, I felt like Chad's date, because I kept grabbing his arm and I kept pointing at the screen and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
I love the ending. The expression on your face, you mentioned a couple minutes ago, your jaw was like dropped basically the whole time. The expression on your face at the end of this movie, you were so utterly like burnt toast done. Like, you were devastated.
I was.
And I mean, all the feels.
All the feels.
All the feels.
Because, oh my gosh, this movie, like Chad said, if you get a chance to see this movie without reading any spoilers, please do so. Because that first experience, if you're a true fan, if you love great storytelling, as we always talk about here, then you'll fall in love with what this film sets out to do. This film creates a beautiful story and a wonderful, you know, just atmosphere and environment for the characters. And then you find yourself in a place where you can't help but have a drop jaw, and you're watching the screen as the film unfolds. I think one of the things that we... here's the thing. I somewhat agree, yet somewhat disagree with you, Chad, because of the fact that the second time I saw it, I was still taken by the story. Like, I don't know. I really loved what this film had to offer. And second time around, I tried to focus on more of like the little things in the film and the Easter eggs and all the little, you know, things that are hidden in the background or whatnot, or even just little hidden elements. But as soon as we hit that 1 hour mark, I was just boom, zoomed right in. I was like, no. Oh, wait, I've seen this, but no. And it's.
Well, and so often when you have an ensemble piece like this, and I go back to the third Dark Knight movie. Dark Knight Rises. Thank you. Michael Caine in that movie. Michael Caine had basically 98% of the emotional weight of that movie was on him to convey. Yeah. It was his job to get the audience to feel.
I was Everybody Michael Caine throughout this entire movie.
But
failed joke.
This film has multiple Michael Caine elements.
Yeah.
Some of whom you don't expect. There's a beautiful interaction. I don't think this is too spoilery, because characters get together and recombine in different ways. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful interaction between Rocket and Thor in particular.
Oh,
that
man.
Is just gold. It's not the full emotional weight of the movie.
No.
But it puts into perspective kind of everything that has come before for at least one of those characters, possibly both of them, and the journey that each of them separately have been on, and now they're in this different combination meeting up in this way.
Yeah.
You know, like that, and it was fantastic.
Oh, it was superb. I think that particular scene in itself really... I thought Thor Ragnarok was going to heighten my level of respect for the character and just the journey that particular character has been on. But I think this scene alone has just elevated that so much higher to know of how... I'm not going to get into it, because then I'll be like a rushing river and just gush about how that whole entire scene just makes you feel. But just to realize the... emotional spectrum that Thor is able to convey and how much of it is done in this small,
it's not a long scene.
It's like,
but I love that they chose to put it in there and keep it in there.
Yeah.
It reminds me, and I don't think Spencer, you saw this with us, but it reminds me when we went to go see the Winston Churchill movie, The Darkest Hour, and that one scene where they're just looking at each other in that room, and it's a beautiful scene, but so much is conveyed, not just in the words, but also in the emotional performance, the physical emotional performance of how their body movement is and their you know, physical cues and whatnot.
Yeah,
and this is one of those. Yeah, this is one of those scenes where you watch it and you'll know what we're talking about as soon as it like jumps in there, because you'll know, you'll recognize it real quick.
Well, and just to see the evolution of a character who's had their own franchise like Thor, like to see what's happened from the first time you met him to, you know, this point in this movie, it's there's what, and to have like the first two movies, we talked about this in we've talked about it in a few of our episodes, but in Lesson 110, we talked about how the first two Thor films are difficult for a lot of people because it's got that more Shakespearean speaking pattern and it's a little more obscure, and it has just less of a connection to our, you know, everyday life, because it's a fantastical setting. And yet, it now you've got things super well grounded after Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the humor and the relatability and the bright colors and everything that happened there. And yet there was a ton of drama in that movie.
Like, oh, yeah.
What occurs in that movie is dramatic, traumatic, and enormous in the life of that character. And then to see where these events in Infinity War push him further, and to see that moment where, you know, there's reflection upon, you know, what, and I just, it's an incredible scene. It's not very long. It doesn't take away from the action, but it just adds an element that it's irreplaceable. There's no other way to get that element. He's not the only one. That's not the only scene that goes for the gut with the emotion. There are quite a few.
And I think it's safe to say, without it doesn't give any spoilers or whatever, I think it's safe to say that if you want to best prep for watching Infinity War, I would say watch Thor Ragnarok right before you go and see this film, because of the fact that you actually have it butted up right against this particular film of Infinity War, and you actually see a lot of what happens in that particular film of Ragnarok, and you see how it correlates to the larger portion of what this film.
Not to mention the fact that this film begins apparently hours after Thor Ragnarok. One of the end credit scenes in Thor Ragnarok is that's Eddie's Infinity
that's my
gauntlet.
Infinity Gauntlet. Hold on,
just turning on its own. That's exciting.
That's scary.
Thanos, is that you?
Yeah.
So
there we go.
Okay, they can't see it.
Audio podcast.
Of course, he picks it up and waves it around. Hi, guys.
It's mine.
I am Thanos. Anyhow, so this movie, the start of this film is minutes or hours after one of the end credit scenes in Thor Ragnarok. So it's a great carryover. I would also argue, just so that you're familiar with some of the context of how some of the heroics work, I would say you should see Doctor Strange before coming to this film, because Doctor Strange has a very prominent role. And if you haven't seen his film, because it's one of the newer ones and it's a, you know, different character and he works and acts differently, then maybe you should see that before seeing this, so that you're not confused about what he's doing. I think they did a pretty good job of either having him explain or have some of the other characters kind of interpret what he's doing. But to really know almost the metaphysical mechanics of his power set, it would not be a bad idea to see Doctor Strange, the Doctor Strange film,
the film,
before seeing Infinity War, just so you're not lost on a couple things.
Which I think that debuted right before Thor Ragnarok, didn't it? That was the film before.
Sure. So, well, and Doctor Strange has a cameo in Thor Ragnarok as well.
Well, and at the end of Doctor Strange, Thor has a cameo.
Yeah,
in...
absolutely. Yeah, it's that complimentary handshake cameo
exactly
sequence.
Needless to say, I think this film is definitely going to be the conversation piece to a lot of comic book fans who have seen the film. And even people who don't care about spoilers and just want to be in the conversation, this movie's going to be talked about and even after the fact, still, you know, speculated and considered and theorized and whatnot about how everything shakes out with this film, because of the fact that it's just a remarkable movie, plain and simple. And like we said, if you get a chance to see it, try to see it without spoiling anything. Because you will not be sorry. This movie definitely delivers on so many levels and on levels that you may not be expecting. So I'm going to kind of pass on the asking if it passes or fails this table, because that should be a no-brainer from how we've been talking about it. If I say, does it pass or fail, Spencer, and you're like, it totally fails.
Fired.
You're fired.
How dare you?
How dare you? I think we'd have an issue. But... let's go ahead and go around, and how many monocles? Go ahead and start with Spencer.
Ooh, I'm going to give this 5, because five I feel monocles. Like this was just an amazing movie. After I got out of it, I felt like I had a death in my own family. People asked me if I was okay, and I was, but it was really traumatic for me.
Yeah. we're not even going within 10 feet of like what happens in this film. I already was the one that said there are multiple fatalities in the first 10 minutes or whatever. So there are multiple fatalities start to finish.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
In this film. I would give it 5. I would say just to add something that hasn't been said up to this point, one of my favorite performances in this film actually is Dave Bautista as Drax. So much of what he does in this film is absolutely delightful.
That's true.
And a total evolution of that character as well. For as like straight, like literal as he is, to have given him so much humor between Guardians 1, Guardians 2, and now this, brilliant.
I agree. I think the great thing about that particular character is you just can't stray too far from what the characters begin to evolve into. And ever since his literal, you know, recognition of statements and whatnot from the first film all the way up until his understanding of the world around him in the second film, and the way he responds to things now in this film, it's funny and really refreshing. I give it a 5 as well, to kind of jump on what's Chad was doing in terms of one last thing. I think another thing that was incredible about this movie, hands down, the soundtrack was superb. So perfect. It's not your typical Avengers soundtrack. And that's kind of... just be mindful when you're hearing everything and you're listening and you're watching.
Also, it should be noted, just for those of you keeping track at home, you do want to stay through the credits.
Yes. There is one end credit scene.
There is not a mid-credit scene like we've seen somewhat recently. There is an end-credit scene that you'll want to see.
True. So, yeah, make sure you get a chance, if you can, check out Avengers Infinity War this weekend or sometime soon at your local theater. The theaters may be packed out and you may have to wait in long lines, but I kid you not, it is well worth it. I know several of us here, probably all of us, might be going to see it again today, might be going again to see it tomorrow, maybe even skip out on work and go see it on Monday. Who knows, right?
Sky's the limit.
That's true. Well, like I said, this is a great film. It's a great movie. If you have any thoughts on it, drop us a line on our Facebook page or our Twitter page. You know the links. If you don't, check out Lesson 110. We'll give you everything you need to know. But until next time, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.